Galatians 6:10 reads, "So then, as we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone, and especially to those who are of the household of faith." Hello, and welcome back to Think This Way. This is the podcast of Faith Bible Church. As always, I am your host, Pastor Bryce. But not as always, we have actually a collection of hosts with us today, because you may remember if you listened last year, several of us went to the Basics Conference in Cleveland, Ohio, at Alistair Begg's church. It's a pastor's conference. And we did, I think, a few podcasts actually back then. Well, today we're doing another podcast, this time with everyone who's come to the pastor's conference. And our quarterly focus has been good works. And I thought this would be, I should correct that. It wasn't that I thought it, it's that Andrew Walden, the mastermind behind this operation, thought this would be a great opportunity for us to talk about good works here in small group. I will start as I intro our guests here. I think all of us who've attended this year were completely surprised. We didn't recognize anyone from Evansville at the conference, but there was one person we all recognized. None of us expected him to be at the conference. A little flash of red that came by, and we said, no, surely that cannot. And it was Elmo himself. And all of us were shocked that he would be at a pastor's conference in Ohio. But Elmo, thank you for joining us today on this podcast.
Hi!
Elmo, could you just tell us what you were doing at a pastor's conference? Well, number one, I don't think any of us thought you were involved in ministry, but what you were doing at this pastor's conference.
Yes, I was asked by a good friend in my D group, Mr. David Adams, if I'd be interested in joining this pastor's conference. So yeah, Mark Wickersham is not really Elmo here. So.
But one of Mark Wickersham's many talents is the Elmo voice. But that's a great segue into our actual introductions here. Today we have three small group leaders and two small group members. And I thought we'd start by just going around getting our names and which small group we're a part of and how we got to that small group. We'll start with Elmo / Mark Wickersham. So Mark, which small group are you a part of and how did you get into that group?
Yeah, Megan and I joined Mr. Ethan Browning's small group a few years ago, and we just both came to the realization that we needed to be in a small group, that this would be a great way to get to know people at Faith Bible Church, to grow in God's grace and knowledge, and I think the way we went about simply selecting what small group we would be in was when the small group actually met, just what fit our schedule, what was best for our family.
So we just assigned that to God's providence. That's how a lot of people choose their group. All right, next up, David Adams.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you doing, David?
Good. So I think about 15 years ago, Jess and I got married. And we immediately knew that we needed to get into a small group to be fed other than the Sunday sermon. So we were prodded to go to John Beale's small group because he was leading me at the time. And about 5 years into that group, we got so big, there were 40 of us in there. And I got kicked to the other side of the fireplace room with the curtain in place and got told I was leading a group. And so I was very blessed and fortunate to obtain that honor to shepherd God's people in my own group. And it has been, I would say, sanctifying at least. So, but yeah, I've been leading that group for probably 10 years now, and it's been wonderful.
Good job!
Elmo, back to the corner with you. So that's the David Adams group. By the way, I guess we should mention that Adams Group meets on Sundays, and that's again to Mark's point of sometimes we do choose our group based on just when they meet. So if you're free on a Sunday, I think the Brownings Group is a Sunday group, and the Adams Group is a Sunday group as well. Now to the Tuesday groups, Andrew Walden.
So I am in the weakest small group leaders group, which is the Walden small group.
Yeah.
But we, the way we ended up having our small group is myself and Jessica were kind of small group nomads for a little while, which I would highly discourage you from being. But we were doing it for many different reasons. But we were started out in the original Guyer small group when we first started at the church. And then due to some work scheduling issues, we had to switch small groups. We ended up in the Beale small group with David Adams, actually. We were with them for a couple years. And then after a couple years there, Justin started up another small group. But due to his working schedule, having to fly quite frequently, he asked if I could come in and help co-lead with him, which was an outstanding opportunity. It was a lot of discipleship, a lot of seeing how Justin and Mary Beth kind of organized their small group and ran their small group. And it was a lot of learning for me, which was amazing to sit through. And then there was the Smiths had a small group at the time, and he took a job in Indianapolis, so they had to move. So the elders approached me about possibly taking over his small group. So myself and Jessica took over their small group, and we've been leading that small group for, I believe this is the fourth or fifth year. I think it's the fourth. Yeah. And so we've just enjoyed, absolutely love getting to know people in the small group and just helping disciple people in the small group and really learning from the people in the small group too. So
yeah, my only question for the Walden small group is, who's winning right now? Are there more adults? Are there more children?
We are vastly outnumbered. We actually had, due to scheduling and sicknesses and things like that, our last small group, we had quite a few people had to back out. And somebody came to the, I think it might have been you, Kevin, came to the group and said him and his wife were actually calculating, just based off of who hadn't backed out yet, there were still going to be like 10 or 12 children there.
Yeah.
So that's even with losing half our group, we still had entirely too many children.
And you do bring up a good point. I mean, and it's something that I guess most everyone doesn't have to think about, but just how small groups function at Faith Bible, like where do new small groups come from? We don't typically just go to someone and say, hey, start a small group. But instead, they are birthed out of the small groups that are already there, which just makes sense. So then typically you have a small group, it gets to a size. You know, there's some variety of what size a small group can be, but it gets to a certain size where it's not really a small group anymore. And then you start a long, slow process of with someone who's already in the group and trusted, starting to move to having an, just like what you did, to having another group. It's always painful. That's always hard. You miss all your friends. No, you didn't die, you know. They're still there, but it's tough.
It's also a very good pain to have. It's that right model of what you see in the Word for it to happen. Because it's not, like you said, it's not just a random person standing up and saying, I'm going to start a small group, and them having no knowledge of navigating the Word or no leadership ability within it. It's not saying that anybody that starts one doesn't have leadership ability, but seeing that model of discipleship to get somebody to the point where the elders, being the under shepherds of the church, are comfortable with saying, hey, you know what? We see this leadership in you. You've been discipled through this. We really trust you to navigate and protect the Word in your group. We're going to, you know, start to create a small group in that. It's just a really beautiful, it's a painful thing to split that group, but it's also a really beautiful thing to see the Lord working through other men as they start to acquire those skills through discipleship and things like that.
Yep. Well, although you may refer to yourself as the weakest small group leader, I don't know, popular vote suggests otherwise, because there are a lot of people in the Walden small group, including our next godly friend, member of the Walden small group. It is Kevin Brace himself. Kevin, how did you get into the Walden small group?
Well, my wife and I came to, or was visiting FBC a couple of years ago, or I guess 3 years ago, whenever we, in 2020. We had only been visiting for like 3 months, but we had gotten connected with Andrew and Jess at the time. And I'm one that wants to take a step back and like see what a place is about before we really jump into it. But my wife likes to jump in head first, and the luncheon came up and she's like, oh, we should go. I said, no, let's take a beat and, you know, see how things go and see what this place is about. And so we ended up at the luncheon we compromised by going, and we ended up going with the Waldens, one, because we knew them and we were new, but also they had childcare, and it worked on our schedule. But it has been a really good opportunity to grow and a really good forum to discuss and learn and grow in the Lord.
Yeah. Well, I do think that Audrey fulfilled her biblical mandate to be a helper to you, which, good job, Audrey. We do appreciate that. All right, now that we're all introduced, I just have a few questions, and I've split these up today on the lines of we've got David and Andrew here who are leading small groups, and then we've got Mark and Kevin here who are members of small groups. So I wanted to start with some questions. We're talking about good works taking place in small groups. I'll just start by saying my observation, which won't be the same as everyone's, is that in my experience, the large majority of good works that I've done and that have been done toward me, not all of them by any means, but a majority of them have been in the context of a small group. And so I'm not going to guess why that is, because I'm going to make David and Andrew guess why that is. And that is my first question. So there's my observation. I think that's somewhat consistent with people, that as we think of good works, so many of them happen in the context of your small group. Why do you guys think that that is?
So I think in our small group, probably to our detriment, it is a close family. And sometimes it's intimidating for new people coming in when we're all mom and dad and brother, sister. But it's easy to do things for people that you intimately love and care about. I think in that context, when you have that love and oversight and over shepherding of the flock, it just makes it so easy to love people back. Like moving. I hate moving, but I will do it for people in my small group because it's love. And I think that's what Christ wants us to be doing for each other. It's if somebody off the street asks me to do a good work for them, I'm like, who are you and how do I know you? But if Kyle wants to meet and talk and do good works, it's so easy to come alongside people that you know intimately and that are working with scripture and wanting to do good works. It's just easy.
I mean, and that touches on the verse we started with, which is as we have opportunity. So first there has to be opportunity. Mm-hmm. And that can be a one-off thing. You meet someone, it's providence, but let's do good to everyone. But then he does say, especially those of the household of faith. I mean, those are our brothers and sisters. We love them. We're close to them.
I don't want to steal any thunder from Sergeant Walden over here, but the communication in the Army is such that if he needs something, there's a chain of command. And I think our elders do a fantastic job of this, is if there's a need in the church, I get an email as a small group leader, hey, so-and-so needs help on this day. There's 8 small group leaders on there, however many they are. Can you guys help? And that happens behind the scenes. But it's that chain of command that you subject yourself as a member of our church or a member of our small group. If somebody needs help, we're coming.
Well, Sergeant Walden, what's your input on this?
So I think I agree with everything that David said, but I also think that there's a level of, within these small groups, you're talking about things on a weekly basis, hopefully a weekly basis, that genuinely matter, not only to life, but to eternity. And when you're on that connected level where it's conversation that truly matters, it's just not superficial, it's just not, hey, how was your week? It's discussing the word, growing in the word, discipling each other, doing all these things that we're called to do over and over and over again in the Word. When you're doing that continually, it is a natural inclination after that point to want to take care of these people on a deeper level. What naturally happens is an outpouring of your heart to these people, because it's not the superficial things that you're going over. Because whenever you're only at the surface level, you don't know the person. You don't really have a deep desire or care for the person, which is our sin cropping up. Like, we should care about that person. But what happens whenever we truly get into deep things and have deep conversations and have a deep love for people within this smaller community, and you're discipling one another and you're teaching one another and you're there for the highs and you're there for the lows, there is just a desire and a joy and making sure that those people's needs are taken care of. And the way that that's produced is through good works.
It's almost, in the New Testament, when Paul's writing letters, he's writing them to local churches, but often he's writing them to the church in your house, the church in Trophimus' house, the church in so-and-so's house. I mean, these are small gatherings. In a sense, in our context now as local churches, we have the opportunity to grow larger than that. And there's all kinds of debate of what's the ideal size of a church. We won't get into that. But, you know, the church that met in Trophimus' house, they knew each other. They knew each other. They loved each other if there were needs. And in a sense, we're wanting to encourage and replicate that same kind of New Testament one anothering love. And to do so does require having that small enough size for that.
It does remind me of one of the things I really enjoy, and we talked about this earlier. One of the things I really have enjoyed about being an elder at FBC is at the end of elders meetings, we go through the directory, and we have column. We go over one column each every elders meeting, and we pray over the families that are within our column. Each one's assigned, and we just go through rotation. We continue that rotation meeting after meeting. But what we do before that is we will go page after page after page, looking at each person that's on those pages. And if one of us says, hey, I haven't seen so-and-so in a while, does anybody have contact with them? 9 times out of 10, one of us has had contact with them within the first week or two. But if it comes down to, oh, yeah, none of us have, well, whose small group are they in? And then when we narrow that down, we're like, well, we need to reach out to that small group leader and make sure that they have had contact. If they haven't, then we need to make sure that we have a deeper contact with them. But it's just knowing that the communities are there and that the communities are truly pouring into each other creates that, just that community. Because our church is, it's not huge, but it's also not small enough where all the elders have a really deep personal connection like we would like to. But it's just the nature of, you know, we only have 24 hours in a day. So knowing that there are small group leaders out there, and it doesn't even necessarily have to be the leaders, that there's small group members out there that we know that we can reach out to and say, hey, have you talked to so-and-so in a while? Is there something we as elders might need to come alongside them to? Or just having that extra layer of community is just a beautiful thing as well.
And I think it's not this big brother thing. Like we're watching everybody just to make sure that they're doing what we need them to do. It's, we haven't seen so-and-so. Do they need help? Do they need prayer? Do they need interjection? Do they need something that we can do as a church body in Christ to help them? Because we know we are all sinful and we are all capable of walking away and falling away. And it's that membership, it's that oversight that you subject yourself to as a member of small group and our church, that when we invite new members in, the congregation is just as much personal responsibility to go after that person as that member does to fulfill their membership side of things as well.
That's why a small group ends up being really the first line of defense. If you're listening to this, you're a member of the church, you begin struggling, which we all do, everybody does. We're really struggling. You know, you're not motivated to be at small group. Maybe you're not motivated to be there at Sunday for church. You have excuses and it's just a hard time. Will anyone know that? Small group is the first way people will know that. And so your small group leader or people in your small group who know you, they're going to reach out. So we don't want anyone to just disappear. Not for our sake, but it's just for their mm-hmm. sake, for your sake. Mm-hmm. And it starts small group, then elders are another layer, you know, just making sure. Well, as we're talking about then, good works taking place in small group, let's make it super practical. I do have to caveat this question by saying, sadly, given the constraints of time, we won't be able to talk about a ton of these examples. So if you're in Andrew or David's small group and you're like, they didn't even mention me and the good works I've done, I am sorry. It's not because they don't care about that. We just don't have time to go through all of them. But the question I have now for Andrew and David is, could you give us maybe a sampling of what are some good works you've seen take place in the confines of your small group?
So my parents live in Texas and Jessica's parents are in Terre Haute. So we have, I'm not going to say no support here, but blood support here. We have a ton of brotherly body affection support here. Carol Nixon is my mom. Jamie Nixon, my dad, right? And they love my children like they're grandchildren. So when Jess and I need a date night because we need to talk and we haven't connected in a while, Carol will take our kids. And if you know my youngest, it's a lot. But that is probably the most important thing that Carol and Jamie do for me and my family as a good work, is so that Jess and my relationship is very important, and having somebody that will take our children so that we can invest in ourselves is really good work. You know, we have people take meals. You know, our brother Warren had that problem with his ankle, and I'm not tooting my horn here, but when I was delivering my meal, he's talking about, well, Carol's coming tomorrow to deliver another meal. And I'm like, I love hearing that. Like, it's one of those things that we don't need the left hand knowing what the right hand is doing. So, you know, helping people move, helping people find jobs, praying for people to find jobs. It's just that nitty gritty stuff that you don't necessarily know that you need help with until somebody steps in and says, hey, I'm going to watch your kids so you can go have a date night, or I'm going to help you move because I hate helping people move, but I'm doing it because I love you, and I don't want you to have any worry about these kinds of things. So it's just the day-to-day life that I see happening all the time, because it seems like we're the land of misfit toys, we call ourselves. So the Watkins don't have family in town. The Nixons are self-contained in town. The Millers are self-contained in town. We don't have a lot of family support, but we definitely consider ourselves more family than the blood relatives that we have.
So I think one of the practical examples out of our group, because all but one couple in our small group are young families. Like, we're talking, like, Reagan is the oldest kid in our small group, and she's 10. So we have a really young families, and with that comes naturally sickness. So through the winter, we know there's going to be at least 2 to 3 families out because one of the kiddos is sick, like a legitimate reason to miss small group. But what we do is we have an app that we use, and usually about an hour and a half before small group, the, hey, sorry, not going to make it, so-and-so sick, comes out. And what I love about that is I know for a fact that almost every single time that happens, somebody within the small group, before small group even starts, has reached out to that family, say, hey, do you need anything? Do you need me to stop by the store and pick you up medicine? Do you need a meal for tomorrow? I think back to my whole family had whatever weird illness we had for a week where we were just knocked out. And I had one couple text me almost every day to offer food or to get medicine or something like that. And I hadn't even like broadcasted how sick we were. I was just like, hey, we're feeling sick. And every day I had somebody within the small group reaching out to me, asking how we are and seeing if we need anything. But something else I really love, and this has nothing to do with my leadership whatsoever, but I think that is a natural outpouring of when you get connected to a small group, is I love walking through the church on a Sunday morning, and there's somebody from the Walden small group volunteering in at least 2 to 3 places in the church. I love being able to walk through the church and see people within my small group that are giving of their time and their talents to help the church in whatever way they can. And again, that's nothing to do with me. And correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin, I don't think I've ever even mentioned serving within the church in small group. But I just love being able to walk through that. It's kind of, I hope not a sinful pride, but it is a pride just knowing that the people of the Walden small group have that desire to help the church in whatever way they can.
Yeah, that's very well said. Yeah, and again, there are a million more examples, but that's just a sampling, and being in a group where you see each other, and that's a piece of it too. Then you, since you know each other, you know the needs. Other people might not know your family's sick because you're not like putting it out on an announcement, but your small group knows, and then jumping into action. What a great picture of things. All right, well, the question that I have for Kevin and Mark here, who are members of small groups. The first one is, we've been talking about practical examples of where Andrew and David as leaders have seen small group good works happening. But for you guys being members of small groups, do any examples come to your mind of times where you've been the recipients of good works that people in small group have been doing?
I can think of one specific example, and Audrey, I'm sorry, I'm going to get the dates wrong, but I think it was July 2022. My in-laws, my father-in-law and mother-in-law and I all went on a motorcycle ride from Evansville. We took the Ohio Scenic Byway out to Leavenworth is generally what we do. But we were going through Derby, Indiana, and you kind of come around a corner, and there's a bridge there with a concrete wall. And my mother-in-law lost control and ran right into the wall. And I was able to, I called Audrey and just kind of told her what was going on. And she was able to contact Andrew, who dropped everything from work to go pick up my father-in-law's truck and the trailer, drive it, you know, an hour out to Derby, and then helped me load up the bikes because my father, she was airlifted to Louisville. My father-in-law took another vehicle to Louisville. I had to hook the trailer up to my truck. We had three bikes. We had to fill, load up. It was like 100 degrees. But he helped me do that, was able to drop everything. Audrey was able to drop the kids off with Jess. And then once that went out, not just within our small group, which we lots of outpouring of encouragement and support, but from the other small groups as well. And other, obviously other members of the church, but, just, that specific example, stuck out in my mind of, something that happened and you're really kind of at your worst and, lots of despair, but help and support that you get from your small group and was, really encouraging.
And there's a good picture of there. You both have those who are really close in your life. So a crisis happens, which it will for everyone. And sometimes we do have biological family, blood family. A lot of times we don't. And just to know that you have people that you can reach out to and they will drop everything and come in. I mean, that's, and then it's a good picture too, like you were saying, of your small group is that first level of support, but we're not like cliques or anything. So, I mean, the whole church loves you guys too and wants to support as well as they learn about those things. So what a great example. Anything come to your mind, Mark?
Yeah, I can think of a couple examples. Last year, Megan and I, we turned the big 5-0. And I asked lots of ladies from our small group to write encouraging notes. And, you know, some of those notes made me tear up. And words are powerful, right? We can either draw people towards Christ or we can tear them down and do the work of the one we shouldn't be doing work for, right? And after making this request, and receiving these notes, Shelley Farrell, now Vila, she asked, "Hey, what restaurant does Megan like?" And she organized ladies from the small group, as well as other ladies from our church, but primarily from our small group, just organized a time for everyone to get together to have a great birthday celebration and just thankful for those smiling faces that I saw in that picture and just making it extra special. I am not the greatest gift giver, and for Shelley to step up like that to help out on what is sometimes considered a sad number and or a important number, that meant a lot to me. And then another example is Ethan Browning. You know, as many of us know, he has a lawnmower business, and I have a John Deere that needs to be tuned up every year, a riding mower, and I don't hesitate to contact him. He's got a trailer. He's got, you know, an SUV, and I'm just thankful for his awesome attitude, for us to be able to, I don't feel guilty, for us to be, for him to pick me up and help load up that riding mower and to take it to the shop and a week later to pick it up. He's super busy as a counselor and also doing his lawn business. But just sometimes people think those are small things, but they're not. You know, life is busy. Life is sometimes hard. And just really appreciated, you know, the good works from Ethan and Shelley.
That's well said. And that touches on what we didn't talk about, the way that spiritual gifts even people's abilities and spiritual gifts play into these good works in small groups. And that's one of the reasons, you know, being in a small group and having a variety of people around you the needs come up, and you have a variety of relationships with different giftings and abilities that God's given to people, where something like tuning up your John Deere or something, it could take you a long time. That could be very difficult.
Yes, yes. Definitely.
But here's Ethan, who he has the ability, he has the gifting in it, and he can come and do that quickly and efficiently is an immense blessing. So it also, small groups are just a great opportunity for using your own gifting and then getting the joy of seeing other people using their gifting. The last question I do have for you, Kevin and Mark, though, is we're speaking in ideals, you know? We're given the rosy picture of small group life and good works. But, you know, we don't all live up in the ideals. We live in the real life, real world of challenges. And I did want to kind of ask my last question. Realistically, can you think of some of the roadblocks or challenges, even within small group? You're looking around, there's opportunities, but some of those roadblocks and challenges that maybe keep us from doing the kinds of good works we want to be doing in small group.
Yeah, I think a lot of times us Christians, we want to blame Satan for various things. And I just need to look in the mirror. A lot of times my heart is lazy and my heart is selfish. You know, I want to have this well-manicured lawn when I should be doing good works for others, you know, or I want to make sure, you know, all my chores are completed. So I would say something that just simply prevents me from doing more good works is me, specifically my selfishness and laziness. Yeah.
Anything for you, Kevin?
In the same vein, I think sometimes we just have a, well, someone else will do it kind of attitude, or, you know, you'll get an email, someone asking for help, and you're just like, well, complacency kind of sets in, and maybe it's laziness, maybe it's I don't want to make time for it, maybe it's, well, that's going to conflict with this, that, or the other, but I think oftentimes we're really quick to make excuses for not stepping up and helping each other, for whatever reason it might be, whether, again, busy, lazy, complacency.
Yeah. And you joked earlier with Audrey, but there's a reality to having a helper of a wife.
Yes.
when as a guy, you know, everything's swirling and you just kind of want to sit back and let someone else, and your wife says, hey, let me help you by saying, just do it.
So I think something to remember that's important, Eric Coher was very influential when I was starting to lead a small group, and he said he starts his year off with personal responsibility. And just as much as you come to small group and I've prepared all week, or Kyle has prepared all week, or Andrew has prepared all week, it takes time and effort and energy that we don't have, but we make time for it. So I come prepared to give that teaching. Just as much as somebody that's attending a small group, you should come prepared to receive that, but also add to the small group. So you should be doing your self-study. I think we're all kind of Bereans at our church. We like studying the scriptures. So have that personal responsibility to share during small group, just as much as I think Kevin was trying to say that, you know, when we're doing these good works, or what keeps us from doing these things, the scripture tells us we have to take responsibility for our actions and work out our salvation with good works and doing those things, not to gain that salvation, but to show what that looks like to non-believers and people that don't know who Jesus is. And why do you go help your neighbor mow? Or why, you know, Wick was telling us about, he's a bad neighbor and he wants to make sure that his neighbors know that he's not a bad neighbor. So he's doing things in his neighborhood to change that perception of he is a Christian, he does love Jesus, and he wants to help go to Judea and Samaria and beyond and help people love Jesus. And I think we have to take that personal responsibility. We're called to do that as men, as women, as followers of Christ.
What I hear echoed in your words is Jesus saying, it's more blessed to give than to receive. Mm-hmm. And that's one of those things that is counterintuitive. So the best way to prove it is just to go to your small group and reverse the typical mindset we all bring, especially on our bad days, of like, somebody pour into me. But to go in and say, I'm going to give, I'm going to give, I'm going to prepare, I'm going to give.
I would also add to that, the only way that you can know the needs of your small group is if you're at your small group.
That's a good point.
Great point.
You're stepping on toes there, Andrew.
I am the toe stepper. But, I mean, there's an honest thing to it, and I can think of our small group, again, that we all have young kids. I think I pray this almost every time that like we close in prayer, that like I am so thankful for my group and the fact that it's a Tuesday night, usually past every single bedtime for kids, but the parents see the need so much to let their children know how important this is to mom and dad, that they're going to be there, that they're going, like, as much as I know some of the families in my small group probably at 5 o'clock are thinking, I don't know if I want to go, I don't know if I have the energy to go to small group, but they still dedicate themselves. I mean, there's many, many nights that I'm at 5 o'clock going, I don't know if I have the energy to teach this tonight.
No choice.
But knowing that that small group is going to be there, that those families have dedicated their time, that they have committed to being a part of this and pouring into each other, and that they truly want to be there to learn from the word, to better their families, because it's not just them. Their kids get to come, they get to play with their friends, but they know, like, I can think of my kids, they get so excited for Tuesday night because they know it's small group night. Mm-hmm. They're not quite to the point of understanding what we're doing at small group night. Reagan is, but the rest of them aren't quite to the point of knowing what we're doing at small group night. But what they do know is that it is important enough for mom and dad that we are going to clean the house. They're going to leave dad alone for at least a couple hours before so that I can review my notes and things like that. That we're going to rush through dinner, and that when people come into the house, we're going to greet them. We're going to have fun with them. We're going to make them feel welcome. It's important enough to us that all this is happening, that we're shutting down our lives for 2 to 3 hours on a Tuesday night. That's vitally important to our families, not only to the parents going, not only to your spiritual growth, but for your kids to see that modeled and how important the word is and how important Christ is, that you're dropping life for 3 hours on a school night when you wouldn't do that for anything else, but you're doing it for this. That's so important. But again, if you're not there, they don't get to experience that. You don't get to practice that. And you also don't get to fulfill the needs that we see going on around. So
that's well said. Well, thank you, men, for contributing to this podcast. Deeply appreciate it. And you who are listening to this, maybe you've been thinking about joining a small group, but you're not sure about it. Maybe your wife will give you a nudge. Or on the other hand, you may be a part of a small group right now, but maybe, as happens for us all, the energy and enthusiasm is waning and you've found it difficult to be eager to give in your small group and do good works. Whatever the case might be in the past, may God help us all now by His grace to think this way.